Sports Day for Kia. The all-new Kia Sorento has landed.
Great to have your company. 7 after 6, 922-11882 is our number here on Sports Day. And a $50 voucher is up for grabs. Thanks to the wonderful team at the Bottle-O. You've got to love your local, the Bottle-O, 922-11882. As we jump into what has been another busy day in sport, but also a sad day in some ways. Waking to the news this morning that Diego Maradona had passed away at the age of 60, which is pretty young, Paul Hazelby, really. Welcome, mate. How are you?
Yeah, going well, Carl. Yeah, what an absolute star he was as a football player. There's no doubt about that. And just looking around the world on social media today, there was a lot of love. He was a god in his particular country. And there's not too many that have been more popular around the world when it comes to sport and even life in general, too. He did so much on the soccer field. 1986 World Cup hero. And, of course, the hand of God. Everybody will always remember that in 1986 in the quarterfinal against England. He did coach as well. But a lot of love out there today. But Carl died at a pretty young age, didn't he?
Absolutely. We'll be having a chat to Daniel Garb shortly about that and the World Game. We thought we'd better get an expert on, Hayes, because we do not proclaim to be that, never have. So we'll get Garby on shortly onto the program. 922-11882 if you'd like to talk about Diego Maradona. The hot topic for expert car servicing that you can rely on, visit repcoservice.com. Hayes, there has been an emerging story when it comes to the hockey ruse. Now, it has been announced this afternoon that there will be an investigation by Hockey Australia by a third party after there was toxic culture claims. This emerged back on around the 10th of November when I started seeing the first talk of this. 5 days ago, there was another story around Georgina Morgan and Emily Chalker, who removed themselves as captain, while Jodie Kenny announced her retirement from international hockey last month. Nicole Arnold, a two-time Olympian, recently recalled. Well, she was one that actually firstly said that we need to have an independent review set up here after claims of poor culture dating back for a decade. We had recently Paul Gudoin, who was the Hockey Roos coach. He denied that there were problems that existed within the squad, but obviously, on the back of these claims from past players and coaches, they have decided Hockey Australia to make a big move. So that is going to be a really interesting story, and I just wonder how deep they will dig.
Yeah, look, this has been bubbling around for a while, and when you look at those retirements on face value, remember at the time thinking it's a bit strange, obviously leading into what would have been or what could be an Olympic year, and that's certainly the pinnacle for a lot of these girls. But good idea, get Hockey Australia and also a third party to come in and get to the bottom of it, because you don't want bullying, you don't want disorganisation within your organisation, especially when you're one of the elite programs in Australia.
Yeah, Nicole Arnold said this. She said that the management was chaotic. There was a lack of clear direction over a span of 3 Olympic Games. And Paul Gudoin admitted, that he missed meetings and there was a lack of care and respect towards the players, but he denied that there was a negative environment. So good to see that they've taken those steps. So that is the hot topic. You'll be blown away with air conditioning service at Repco Authorised Service. You can book at repcoservice.com. Hayes, a bloke has decided to come out of retirement for a bit of a feel-good story, I reckon, because, you know, given the late and great Danny Frawley has left us, James Frawley has decided to, as a delisted free agent, that's what he was on the back of Hawthorne season ending. He has decided to front up for another season, at least at St Kilda, after playing 239 games.
And doing it for Spud, those were his comments. So, look, there's a bit of a romantic notion about this, but in the end, St Kilda in recent times, they've been pretty shrewd when it comes to their recruiting. They brought in a lot last year. They rose up the ladder and they probably just lack one key defender. And clearly, because of his relationship with Brett Ratton at Hawthorne, he was convinced that there was a role for him to play. And I think there is. They don't have those tall defenders that can play on the big guys. He can do that. And sometimes when your club like Hawthorne was heading in the wrong direction, you have these players that do retire a little bit early than you probably would have hoped for. So to go around for one more year, maybe 2 more years, depending on how they go this year, I think it's a good move by St Kilda, and I expect them to continue their rise up the ladder again next year.
9221882 is the number if you'd like to join us. We've got that $50 voucher thanks to the Bottle-O. We've got a game of cricket unfolding as we speak. Sydney Thunder, who are hoping to work their way into the final of the WBBL, posted 6 for 143 from their 20 overs, and right now the Brisbane Heat in the sixth over are 2 for 34. So the equation is they need 110 runs from 89 balls with 8 wickets in hand. Hayes, it was also announced today that there will be 2 NRL Premiership fixtures played at HBF Park in 2021. Canterbury Bankstown Bulldogs and the Melbourne Storm are headed to Perth. Round 5, Saturday the 10th of April, 3:30pm start Western Standard Time, and then the Sydney Roosters and the Canberra Raiders, round 12, Saturday the 29th of May, 5:35pm. That will start. Good to see that the NRL are continuing to invest in playing some games here in WA.
Yeah, well, they need to, Carl, because obviously we don't have our own team here, and the matches that have been played here in the past have warranted them coming back again. There's been some good crowds here. There's a healthy respect for the NRL code, no doubt about that. And also Melbourne Storm, when you bring a team of that calibre, there's a lot of people that want to go and watch this. So keep it up, and who knows, maybe in time if the game does keep growing in this part of Australia, we may head back towards another NRL team.
Now, Jason Berendorf, front of the media today, declaring that he is ready for BBL action. Back injury kept him on the sidelines last season. Let's hope that we can see him out there. But we need to clear a commitment. We're going to get to the East Coast next. A bloke who's going to join us, he's very kind, Daniel Garb, to talk about Diego Maradona. 922-11882. If you'd like to join us here on Sports Day, that $50 voucher thanks to the Bottle-O. Great range, friendly service, and they're independently owned by locals. You've got to love your local, the Bottle-O. You can do that after this. 922-11882. Welcome back to Sports Day. Great to have your company. News headlines, as we spoke about off the top for car sales, number one for cars is that Diego Maradona has sadly passed away at the age of only 60, and a man that can elaborate a little bit more in depth about his career and probably compare him to some of the all-time greats is Daniel Garb, and he joins us here on Sports Day. Welcome, Garby. Nice to have you on the program, mate.
Yeah, thanks, boys. Nice to be on to celebrate one of the great sporting lives.
When it comes to Diego Maradona, what was it from your perspective that made him so good?
Well, I think at his peak, he took to the game to a level that we simply hadn't seen before. I mean, when you look back at that 86 World Cup with Argentina and then what he was able to do with Napoli, who were a small team in Italy, had never won a title before, and he won back-to-back titles. I don't think the game has ever seen and will ever see one individual simply dominate to the extent that he did and therefore lead a team to triumphs, the magnitude of a World Cup and a Serie A title, purely based on his exploits. Like, they don't happen without him. And it's just the most remarkable thing to do in a sport like football. And, you know, we've seen so many greats, Pele and Messi and Cristiano Ronaldo, and all of them have done incredible things on their own, and so many others that you can mention. But I think Maradona went to a level, just slightly, that even the other immortals haven't gone to, just for a period. And, you know, the emotion that he was able to elicit from his own countrymen, of course, the Argentinians, but then the world, who watched on simply in awe. You know, I don't think a sports person has had as much of an impact, certainly in my generation, apart from, you know, maybe a Michael Jordan, who you can put in the same bracket, quite like Diego Maradona. And then there was a downside of it as well, which, you know, everyone rode that roller coaster, you know, with him on. But, you know, on field, yeah, he simply was able to take the game to a level that I don't think we'd ever seen before.
4 World Cups, 1986 World Cup as well, 91 internationals, 34 goals across that time. In terms of his footballing ability, what specifically did he do better than everybody else?
Well, his control of the ball. I mean, he simply had a romanticism with the football that I don't know anyone else has been able to match. I mean, his dribbling skills were just simply unbelievable. That goal against England at the 86 World Cup, and that game sums up Maradona on the whole, doesn't it? I mean, the most brilliant World Cup goal ever scored, where he literally dribbled through the entire team, starting in his own half, on a bumpy pitch at a time when you could actually try and take players out and get away with it. And he certainly was chopped down a lot in his career. But he beats the whole England team on his own and then scores, of course, the hand of God goal when he knowingly cheats and runs off celebrating. That's Maradona encapsulated in 90 minutes, isn't it? The floor genius that he is. But that close control, you know, no one else got close to doing that until he came along. And in the finishing as well, which, you know, running at pace with so many people hanging off him, to finish with such power and such precision time and time again was simply masterful. He was simply a player that's redefined the game because of his ability to do that.
Some of the floor geniuses, they had their challenges after retirement, and he had his, and he also went into coaching. How did he go as a coach?
Oh, look, not great, but, you know, that was always going to be the case, let's be honest. But it sums up the way the regard in which he's held in Argentina, that he was allowed to coach their national team at a World Cup. I mean, he wasn't qualified for it at all, let's be honest. Mm. But it's Diego Maradona, and whenever he said he wanted to coach the national team, that honour was bestowed on him because of what he did for that country. I mean, there's reports of players sitting around all morning because Maradona would only run training sessions in the afternoon because he wanted to sleep in. But, you know, that's the way it went under him. And it was never going to end well. But, you know, if he wanted to coach the national team, so be it. I mean, he's regarded as more of a human, more than a human in that country. He is treated like a god. And that's not something we can fully understand here in Australia. We might give the odd player the nickname God, but let's be honest, we don't treat them anywhere near that. They do. They treat him as more than just a human. And maybe only Tendulkar in India comes close to getting that sort of, you know, reverence from their fans. And that's probably why he developed such flaws and such addictions and such problems off the field, because it was so engrossing. And he's been quoted as saying that, you know, live a day in my shoes and you'll understand why I do some of the things that I do.
Is that like Gary Ablett Sr. being the coach of Geelong?
Probably, yeah, in an AFL term, saying I want to coach Geelong, and, well, yeah, Gary Ablett Sr. do it. But that wouldn't happen in Australia.
Mm.
It just wouldn't. I mean, maybe back in the day, maybe in the 70s and 80s or so on, but not now. Yet it was only the 2010 World Cup that Maradona was allowed to lead his nation, and, yeah, it didn't go as well as it should have.
What about the Asian Champions League? You've been following that closely. We'll start with the Perth Glory.
Yeah, they look pretty good. I must be honest, I've been impressed, considering the lack of talent that Richard Garcia's got to work with in terms of top-level talent compared to the Asian teams they're up against. Some of the young players have looked really impressive, and it's been great to see. I think there's reason for Perth Glory fans to be optimistic about the season ahead. They're going to reinforce their squad with more experienced players, but these young talents that are coming through, they will just be buoyed by this experience. So I think overall, even though the Glory won't get through the group, and let's be honest, none of the Australian teams will, it's a very difficult challenge for them, they'll learn a lot from that experience. And I think it'll be great for Richard Garcia as well to be away with these players in that environment.
Has it been a bit disappointing? Obviously, Melbourne's got one win, Sydney yet to win as well.
It is disappointing, but, you know, we're kind of getting used to it now in Australia. Unfortunately, the gap is just growing to such an extent between the Aussie teams and the top teams around Asia. They've just got more resources. They've got better players to call upon. And Australia's struggling to keep up in Asia. It's a big issue for us, but one we need to rectify, because, you know, we've just gone too many years without a team properly challenging since the Western Sydney Wanderers won the Asian Champions League back in 2014.
What did you make of the season fixtures release?
Look, I quite liked it. Let's be honest. It's a really odd time to launch a season, December 27, in between Christmas and New Year. And that was always going to be a concern for people. But when you look at the schedule, it really does set up as a festival of football all the way through. I think there's only Monday night that's off in terms of no games being played for the first month of the season. So you're going to have football games on every night. And in the final year of a broadcast deal, I think that's a luxury for them in terms of attracting eyeballs to the competition and trying to get a good broadcast deal when the season is completed. So they've made the most of an ordinary situation, obviously influenced by COVID. And having games on every night, I think, is going to be great during the summer. The Glory, of course, don't get to play at home until mid-January because of the borders being closed. So it's going to be a tricky start for them in terms of being delayed. But hopefully they can hit the ground running when they're back in action and they get some crowds to HBF Park.
Garby, I love your social media work and I've been following you closely. Recently, not too happy with some of the pricing for the juniors to get involved with the sport.
Yeah, that's a big issue in the game right now, and it's one that needs rectifying by the FFA immediately. It's a huge issue for the game. I mean, the benefit of football is that, you know, you can have a person like Maradona, let's link it back to the person we were speaking to, who comes from absolutely nothing, who plays in dust bowls in Buenos Aires, probably without boots you know, for the first few years of his career as he's coming through and emerges to be the best player in the world. Yet in Australia right now, we've got a situation where, you know, kids are growing into their teenage years, showing some talent, making representative teams, and their parents are being slugged with $2,500 to $3,000 fees to pay for that privilege. And parents are going away saying, well, it's too expensive. We're not going to let our kid play that sport. You're hearing stories of kids in under eights, under nines being charged $500 for the year when AusKick is free. It's just a nonsense. And it's not every club, but the FFA's got to stamp it out, because the appeal of football is that anyone can play it, regardless of how tall you are, short you are, how much money you've got, how many people you're playing against. It's a sport for the masses. That's what's made it the most popular sport in the world. And it used to be that way here in Australia as well. And it led to a golden generation once upon a time. So why it's changed so much to be so expensive without any real benefits being shown in terms of development to the professional game for players, you know, boggles the mind. And the FFA needs to correct that quickly.
It's not the FFA anymore, is it, Garby? I saw a tweet from you. It's now Football Australia, isn't it?
It is now Football Australia. It reminds me of when Sean Parker said to Mark Zuckerberg in The Social Network, drop the VA, just Facebook, it's cleaner. So they've got rid of the federation part. It's just Football Australia, which probably does sound a bit better. And that means the FFA Cup will change to the Australia Cup, which actually was the cup competition in domestic football back in the 1960s, I think. So the Australia Cup's got a nice ring to it as well. So, that'll be the change. It's Football Australia from now on.
And, mate, I know you're busy tonight hosting a function over there. Thank you very much for checking some time with us. But Liverpool's loss last night at Anfield sees them yet to qualify.
Yeah, they'll be OK, though. Their next two games, home to Ajax and then away to Michelin, the Danish side, which is actually the team of Socceroo Awamobile, who scored this morning in the Champions League. So an Australian scores in the Champions League. What a great story that is. So they'll be OK, the Reds. This morning's performance was ordinary, but they're missing so many players through injury. I think you can give them a little bit of leeway in that respect, but they'd want to rectify that before they take on Brighton in the Premier League on the weekend.
Thanks for having a chat to us, mate. Take care.
Thanks, boys.
Daniel Garb with all of the news headlines out of the World Gamers. Car sells every 30 seconds on Car Sales. 922-118-82. I want to know from you that love the World Game as to who you believe is the best to ever play the game. Does Ronaldo and Messi measure up to some of the greats like Pelé and Maradona? Your call's next. 922-118-82 is the number. We've got a $50 voucher to give away thanks to the wonderful team at the Bottle-O. You've got to love your local at
Sports Day for Kia. The all-new Kia Sorento has landed.
Righto, straight to the calls. Welcome back to the program. $50 voucher thanks to the Bottle-O. Graham in Edgewater is first. G'day, mate.
Good afternoon to you. Yes, all this Maradona business. I'm very, very surprised everybody's lauding him as the greatest footballer of all time.
Well, go back tell us to why he's not.
June the 22nd, 1986 at the Azteca Stadium, 51st minute. Cheat. Robbed England. You can say 4 minutes later he scored a wonderful goal of the century. Yeah. Would he have been up for that? Would he have been up for that if he hadn't scored that cheat goal? Anything he did before that, anything he's done after that, spoiled in that moment. Totally spoiled. He's a cheat. I mean, what else can you say? And that doesn't make him the greatest footballer in the world. If you want to know who the greatest footballer in the world is, as far as I'm concerned, he's one George Best. What he could have done on the world stage, if he'd gotten the chance, if he played for a decent country, in respect to the fact that Northern Ireland is a decent country, yes, but not as far as world football is concerned at the time or even now. The fact that Maradona played on perfect pitches, George Best played on slag heaps of pitches, and what a player he was. That, to me, is the greatest footballer that ever lived.
I mean, Graham, to play the 586 games that he played, 361 for Manchester United from 63 to 74, and to end in 1984, I think is testament to how good that he was. I think you make a very good case. We've asked people to throw in the greatest player of all time, but certainly from Northern Ireland, mate, there was no doubt that he was the best, and you have extended that to the best in the world. So thanks for your call, mate. You're well and truly in the running for the $50 voucher, okay?
Very nice indeed. Good luck.
Good on you, Graham. Thank you for your call. 922-118-82. Sam joins us from Chidlow. Welcome, Sam.
Hi.
Gee, Sam, you don't sound like you'll be winning the $50 Bottle-O voucher. How old are you? How old?
I'm 10.
You're 10. Yeah. All right, buddy. What do you reckon? Tell us about who. What do you want to talk about? Well, who's your best soccer player? Come on. You'll be going for Messi or Ronaldo, I reckon.
Yeah, Ronaldo.
Yeah. You like him?
Yeah.
I went to Malaysia, mate, and I was staying in a hotel, Hayes, across the road from this shopping centre, and there was about 4,000 people, I reckon, lined up to get into the shopping centre. I thought, what are they
there to see you, Carl?
No. But you know what? Ronaldo wasn't even there. You know what they were doing? They're actually lining up to go and put their faces in a life-size cardboard cutout of Ronaldo. That's what they were doing. That's how infatuated they were with Ronaldo when I was there. This is only a couple of years ago. Anyway, Sam, sorry, mate. It's your time to shine, mate. What have you rung us for?
I heard the radio and I wanted to call up.
Yeah, and what do you want to talk about?
Ronaldo.
Ronaldo, Carl, he's saying that Ronaldo is the greatest of all time. So there it is. But they are, it's on a whole different scale, isn't it, Carl, the popularity of these players. Like, we get it and we see a little bit, a tiny fraction of it here in the AFL, and we go over the top about AFL players. But these guys, honestly, they are just absolute megastars in their own life. And they do have a lot of issues, don't they, after their careers, when everything sort of stops for a little period and they've got so much attention on them, the adulation that they do have, that, you know, we've seen some of the biggest names in sport, you know, really struggle at the end of their careers for whatever reason it is. And I just wonder who has been the greatest fall from grace that we've seen across world sport. Is it somebody like Ronaldo with some of the addictions and struggles that he's had? We had Ben Cousins as well here on a different scale, but there's just that element that they can't get on with their lives once it's all done, or is it the attention that sends them that way?
Well, it was nice to hear from young Sam. He's only 10. He's probably outside our normal demographic, which is really good. But, yeah, when you think of a player of the caliber of Ronaldo, which is all he probably knows in his lifetime, you know, 196 games with Manchester United up until 2009. He's now playing for Juventus. He's played 69 games there. At Real Madrid, 292 games. So he's certainly getting up there when it comes to the world's best. They probably play a little bit more than they did back in the days of a Georgie Best. As we go to Sam in Churchlands. G'day, Sam.
G'day, how are you?
Good.
I'm glad you weren't sitting in the car with me, but when you said g'day to Sam from Chidlow, I started talking to you until I heard the 10-year-old boy coming.
Very good.
That would have taken you back.
Anyway, that's the embarrassment, but no one's here, so it never happened. So, yeah. I'll just say I've got a couple of things. One, I'll end with just the cost of junior sport, but the fellow who was a bit fired up about Maradona, I mean, if we're all judged by our worst moment, then I think none of us are going to be considered good at anything because, you know, everyone's made mistakes. And, you know, people will say it's intentional, other people will say it's not. The reality is what happened. So, but if you're judged by your worst moment, then it's pretty harsh, I think. But in general, though, when you talk about the greatest players, inevitably it's a bit like the best player in AFL, and since it's the midfielder that's called in football, it's the striker. So, you know, there's plenty of awesome midfielders and defenders who wouldn't get a look in just because all the great players, strikers, are on the end of the ball getting up to them in the first place. So, I can't name a player. I'm going to opt out on that one. But and then in terms of the cost of junior sport, I've been a treasurer of a local, of a junior club, and there's just a lot of costs in there, and no one's picking up the costs, or they can't. You know, ground hire, no one does stuff for free anymore, people want to get paid for coaching, so there's insurances. So, you know, unfortunately, you can guts ache about the cost of junior sport, but there's a lot of costs in the system to pick up.
When it comes to cost of junior sport for Auskick, and I'm not sure, Sam, whether it's soccer or AFL or what junior sport you're talking about, but it's somewhere between 70 and 130 bucks for Auskick. But, you know, what Garby's talking about with, you know, costs up to $500, do you know, on top of, say, the AusKick programs with the AFL's registration, what sort of other fees are added on top of that $70 to $130 bucks that you might register your child to play in AusKick? Do you know?
I don't, but I was the treasurer of a hockey junior hockey club, and the fees there are up around $500 bucks. And the way that the fees came across, there was some subs to Hockey Australia and things like that. But then, cost of coaches, cost of ground hire, insurances, balls, equipment, and the fees were north of $500 bucks.
Okay, good on you, mate. Thank you for that. Just having a look at a few of the fee, say at Curtin, I'll roll those in a moment to the program, so we'll get a little bit more of an idea across that, but that's from Sam's experience, and we can all take that on board. Thanks for your call, mate. Certainly right in the running for the $50 voucher, so thanks to the Bottle-O. Let's go to Lee in Alfred Cove. G'day, Lee.
Gentlemen, good evening.
Far away.
I'm a believer you can only judge a player or any sportsman by what they've won and the statistics around them. So you've got Michael Schumacher, you've got Michael Jordan, you've got Don Bradman. It goes on. And the greatest player ever to play football was Pelé, no question about it. Three World Cup winners, medals. He was voted the greatest sportsman in history by Sports Illustrated in 2000. He had a much better, more all-round game than Maradona. He had both feet. He could head. He was fast. He scored 1,254 goals. It goes on. He dwarfs everyone in terms of statistics and what he won in the game of football by a long, long way. With pitches that they could, the players today, you know, they couldn't play on those pitches they played in the 50s and 60s and 70s. They just couldn't. So there is no one better than Pelé, unfortunately. And it's a blight on Maradona, but he couldn't hold a candle to Pelé, I can tell you. And I've been to Brazil, and he's regarded as a god in Brazil,
god,
just as much as Maradona. He's in Argentina, every bit as much. So, statistically, Pelé is the greatest player of all time. No one can take that away.
Now, 560 appearances for only 541 goals, though, for Santos and New York Cosmos, though, through his time from 1956 to 1977. But when you consider 1956 to 1977, Hayes, that is, if you start in the 56 season, you end at the 77 season, that's basically 23 years at the top level. Unbelievable. And playing for the Brazilian national team, this is incredible. From 1957 to 1971.
Good argument. Those two, they did get voted the two greatest of all time in a recent survey that took into account
all
the greats around the world.
So do the young blokes measure up, though? That's what, you know, from young Sam is rung from Chidlow, who's 10, you know, he hasn't seen these blokes play. So do the Ronaldos and the Messis in modern times actually measure up to some of these greats
World Cups
from days
gone by? Are important,
aren't
they, Carl? Particularly, you've got to have success at the World Cups. I think that's the greatest stage of all. And if you can put on a show and get one of them, maybe two, then all of a sudden, you know,
well, not
your
if you hand it
goes
in,
up in lights.
Yeah, not if you hand it in.
We spoke about this the other day in regards to cheating when we were talking about Steve Smith, and, you know, the referees are there to do a job. The umpires are there to do a job in certain sports, and, you know, whether it's in cricket where you hit it and you don't walk, is that the same as an action like this? Is it trying to draw a free kick? Is it touching a ball, or you tell the umpire that you touched a ball that went through for a goal, but you didn't really touch it? We all play a small part, and there's little cheating actions that creep in. But at the end of the day, the referee has to make the decision, and they paid it as a goal.
Now, Sam rang up from Churchlands and said that he was involved in hockey. I've just brought up the 2020 fees for Curtin University Hockey Club. Now, we know that Curtin University have premier grades. They go right down to your juniors, and they've got social membership from $20. A junior 3-4 was $103. 5-6 was $111 this year. That was the fees. Now, that may not have eventuated because things were shut down due to COVID. A junior 7-8 was $144. A junior 9-10-11-12 goalkeeping with own gear was $110. And a junior 9-10-11-12 was $187. So that's comparable to AusKick. It certainly seems that it's a lot more expensive to play soccer. If your kids are involved in junior sport, what does it cost? 922-11-882 is the number. We'll be back with your calls next.
Sports Day for Kia. The all-new Kia Sorento has landed.
Keep the calls coming. We've got the $50 voucher thanks to the Bottle-O to give away. We'll be giving that away shortly, and we are fast approaching the 7 o'clock news as we go to Kevin in Bankshire Grove. G'day, Kev.
Hi, guys. How are you? I'd just like to say that although I agree with the gentleman who said that George Best was the best player ever, I must say the close control of those three players, George Best, Pelé and Maradona, was way ahead of anyone else at that time. I do think Messi's up there with these guys, but for me, it's achievements. And Pelé did get three World Cups. So George Best, I'd love to have seen him playing with a decent side. Because as the gentleman said, he played with a fairly ordinary Northern Ireland team, but George Best was brilliant, and I'd love to have seen him on a decent pitch with some great players around him.
Beautiful. Thank you very much for your opinion. 922-1182 is the number. Very, very good calls tonight, Hayes. It's going to be tough to pick the winner for the $50 voucher. Lee joins in from Parkerville. G'day, Lee.
Hello.
G'day, how are you?
Hi, Leon. Yeah, good, yourself?
Yeah, very well, mate. What do you reckon?
I believe Cristiano Ronaldo is the best footballer for his technical abilities alone.
Why? That's it?
Yeah, he's beautiful in the air. He can shoot with both feet and he's free. He does a beautiful knuckleball. Miles better than Messi because Messi can't hit.
How much have you had a look at the highlights of obviously some of the guys we've been talking about when you talk about Pelé and George Best and obviously Maradona?
Yeah, well, I've seen the hand of God from Maradona against England. You know, Pelé didn't really play much against, you know, the bigger teams in Europe and stuff. I understand he won the World Cup, but the Brazilian squad was very good then. I haven't really watched much of George Best, but I know he's pretty good.
Very good, mate. Thanks for your call. I don't know that I can give you the $50 voucher to the Bottle-O, even though I'd like to. It's good to hear the kids calling in tonight, Hayes, on their way home, hopefully from their own sports. But I'd love to hear from some mums and dads in the next couple of minutes about how much it actually costs for junior sport, because what Daniel Garb's raised earlier around the cost for soccer seems to be exorbitant, Hayes. And, you know, when you consider that AusKick is between $70 and $130, I've just broadcast the fees for, say, Curtin University, and that's only one club, but it seems to be quite comparable to the AusKick program. It's always something when you're, you know, you've got your kids and you've got your kids' passions, and, you know, just hearing young Sam tonight, and we probably should have asked Lee how old he was before we let him go. But when you hear those kids ringing our program, mums and dads taking them to their sport, sometimes it's one of the biggest contributions. Well, let me say this. It's probably one of the biggest contributions that you make to your children's lives, to be honest, to introduce them to different sports. And you probably experience it right now with your kids.
I am. That's all we do is we travel around. Well, not me, because I'm here with you most nights, but my beautiful wife, very busy doing all those things. But it is a challenge for football in this country, isn't it? Because they are struggling a little bit to compete with some of the other sports. They're falling behind, and that's why I never like it. And I know the players here in Australia aren't on the big money, but when you've got these superstars over there in Europe getting paid massive amounts of money, and you've got obviously the bottom end, the grassroots, having to fork out a fair bit to play, it doesn't sit too right with me. And I hope we never get that way in the AFL. I think the salaries are about right, and the grassroots program could be improved, but it's better than, I think, the setup that they have in football.
Okay, let's go to Pete in Rivervale. G'day, Pete.
Oh, hello, fellas. Yeah, I'd like to refute the fellow that said Pelé holds all the records statistically. He actually doesn't. There's the former German star striker, Gerd Müller, played 62 games for Germany and scored 68 goals, which is better than a goal a match. I think Pelé was around, could you check this on the internet? I think it was 92 games and about 75 goals for Brazil. So Gerd Müller definitely had a better strike rate, but I'm not saying Müller.
Gerd Müller played Müller. 550 games, 487 goals. And are you talking about
No. What about international for West Germany? I think it was 62 appearances for 68 goals. Is that
correct? Yep, that's 100% correct. Yep, that's
yeah,
correct.
What was Pelé for Brazil when he played for Brazil? Have you got those statistics?
Yep. So Pelé, when it came... So Pelé, when it came to his actual international performances for Brazil, he scored 77 goals from 92 appearances.
Yeah, so you'd have to say Müller had a strike much better strike.
Müller's strike rate was better, for sure.
Yeah. Not necessarily as good a player, but I'm just saying it statistically, you know, Müller would probably have one of the best strike rates of any player or striker in history of soccer, I would say, yeah.
Good on you. Thanks, Pete. Let's quickly squeeze Greg in from Balcatta. G'day, Greg.
How you doing, mate?
Good.
My uncle told me, I'm a man going on 60 years of age.
Yeah.
And my uncle told me when I was about 10 years of age, we're from Northern Ireland. Georgie Best was a great soccer player. But there was a guy from Portugal called Eusebio who reckons, my uncle reckons, was every bit as good as Georgie Best.
So who was that again, sorry?
Eusebio. I'll give you... It's Eusebio. Played for Portugal.
What was his record like?
What was he? Have a look at it, mate. Have a look at it, hey?
400. Well, probably not as good as the others. 436 appearances, 424 goals. He played 64 internationals for Portugal and scored 41 times.
And this is going back in the 60s.
Yep, he played. Well, he played from 57 to 1980.
Yep, he sure did.
But
and
probably not as good as Müller, and Müller's probably got the best. Well, Müller's got the best strike rate out of the three that we've just discussed now. Pelé and Eusebio, who you've just thrown into the melting pot. Hey, we need to clear a commitment on the other side, Hayes. You, I'm going to throw it over to you, mate. You're going to have to pick a winner, because we've had some great calls, and we'll do that next. Welcome back to Sports Day. Nice to have Shelley Nitsky on our program. Giant performance of the day, we were hoping from our girls yesterday. That didn't happen for Giant Bicycles. We're still riding with you, but they did pretty well, I think, in a situation where it was very different, I think, to any season that we've had before, Shelley. That's probably something that you may or may not subscribe to. What do you think? You reckon your girls did okay or not?
Oh, look, we had a, I guess we had an up and down season, but we got through to the finals, which we were obviously very happy about. But unfortunately last night, we just probably weren't good enough on the night. I think that the Stars, were definitely played the better cricket on the night. So it was a disappointing way to finish, I suppose. But, nevertheless, we got to the finals and gave ourselves every chance.
Were you too probably reliant on the girls at the top of the order in Devine and Mooney? Because they were hogging it a fair bit towards the end of the tournament. The other girls weren't getting much of a bat, were they?
Yeah, they were going along nicely, actually. But I thought we had some good contributions throughout at different times. And then obviously last night they probably they missed out, and we did have some, Nicole Bolton and a few others stand up through the middle order, so we just kind of didn't put it all together, which would have been nice.
Tennille Peschel, she put it all together across the whole tournament. She was fantastic and has a big future.
Yeah, she was fantastic, Pesh. She had a bit of an interrupted pre-season, but come out and has bowled really well and ended up in the team in the tournament, which was a massive achievement for her. And she was really important for us, particularly in the power play. Always took early wickets and set the innings up nicely for us with the ball.
Just back to Devine and Mooney, was it difficult conditions last night? Because normally their strike rate is a real feature, but you know, Mooney 27 off 29 and Devine 12 off 20, that's something I hadn't seen too often in this tournament.
Yeah, look, it was. I think that the pitch we played on, we played it at North Sydney against the Stars in a night game earlier in the tournament, and it was quite a quick wicket. But batting first, it probably didn't have the pace that we expected, and was holding in the wicket a little bit, and the Stars girls bowled really well, so they both sort of came up and said it wasn't easy to kind of get going, and it as it normally does there, it got a bit better as the night went on, but they said it wasn't easy, but certainly kudos to the Stars, they bowled pretty well as well.
One of your other stars had a pretty tough tournament in Amy Jones, a bit disappointing, obviously, with the injury, but not having her at her absolute best probably hurt a little.
Yeah, it did, and I think a lot of the, you know, the limelight was taken when we lost Soph with a back injury as well, but, you know, we actually were missing Jonesy for a good part of the tournament, and then at the back end when she did get back, probably just didn't get going what like we would have liked and didn't get to spend the time in the middle. So that was actually a pretty big loss for us. I think Mooney and Devine, the big names at the top, but Jonesy's a pretty important makeup of our team, and we didn't have her for a good part of it. So she was a really good contributor last year, and we missed her this year for sure.
What about your bowlers? We did mention Tennille, but also Sarah Glenn, Samantha Betts had some pretty good moments too.
Yeah, they did. Sarah Glenn was international from England out here for her first WBBL and sort of a newer player in the English setup. And to be honest, she probably performed better than we expected. So she was fantastic. She'd never hardly bowled in a power play before, and she ended up being one of our most reliable bowlers up the top there. So she was really important for us. And Betsy was fantastic. She carried the drinks for the sort of the first part of the tournament, and then when she got her opportunity, as I knew she would, she took it with both hands and ended up being, a pretty important makeup of our bowling attack. And they've done a really good job for us throughout the tournament as well.
The tournament as a whole was unbelievable. Lots of viewers. And even last night, 303,000 viewers tuned in, 30% increase on last year. We've spoken about the standard and how much that's improved in recent times. This competition is about to take off, I reckon.
Yeah, it's unbelievable. It just keeps growing, and I didn't know those figures until you just said that, but I think, you know, they took a chance last year and went standalone with the WBBL, and it's obviously paid dividends and been a pretty good move. So to think that we're still getting that following, and I know you're always getting lots of messages from different people that you haven't heard of for a while saying how much they enjoy following the WBBL. So, yeah, hopefully it keeps trending that way, because it's just great to be involved in it.
Now, just going back to Samantha Betts, we had a chat to her the other night, and she spoke very fondly of you because I believe, and you just mentioned her then, that you spotted her, I think, as a 17-year-old schoolgirl, didn't you, about 7 years ago?
She's a ripper, Betsy. So she was a little bit younger than that, actually. So I'm obviously from South Australia, and I was in Adelaide working at the SACA, and she's from Broken Hill, and she was coming down to a clinic from Broken Hill for us, and I sort of made contact and sort of just spoke to her mum and made sure they knew exactly what they were coming for. And she said, yeah, she hadn't been playing in the New South Wales school program, and sort of come down there and played under 15s for the SACA and stayed in our programs ever since. And when I stopped playing for South Australia, she actually took my number. So go back a little bit away with Betsy. So it's good to see her perform.
Yeah, and so what caught your eye about her at that time?
Oh, look, she was dead keen to start with, and she just had a real fire, I think, and she's just good bowler, comes in and a real competitor. And I think she probably showed that for us, you know, all these years later, that if you've been around the group, if you knew Betsy, how she prepared, even when she wasn't playing, you knew she was ready to go. She had all her plans for the opposition batters, and then she wouldn't be playing. But every game, she'd just keep bouncing back and she'd be ready. And I knew that when we picked her, she was more than ready. And, I wasn't surprised when she made the most of her opportunity, that's for sure.
All right. Now, all of the WA girls are winging their way home tonight as we speak to Western Australia. You're staying over there on the East Coast. What's the next ahead for you?
A little bit of a break now for me. We're sort of in Sydney until the... live in Brisbane now, so they're letting us back in on the 1st of December. So we'll make our way back home to cross the border on the 1st of December, and then... unsure of what January holds with as far as international tours go with the Australian team, but looking like potentially going to New Zealand early in 2021, maybe February or something like that.
Have you enjoyed the experience, and do you think going forward you'll have a similar makeup next season?
Yeah, it's been a good experience. I think it's certainly been a unique one, being in the hub here for five, nearly 6 weeks now. So it's been pretty unique. But I think upon reflection, it's been a massive learning curve and really enjoyable. And I guess now's the time when we sit down and have a look at the list and see where everyone's at and what we need to potentially go to that next step and make a final and win a title. So that sort of will play out in the next few months, I guess.
Good on you, Shelley. Thanks for joining us. Take care, look after yourself, and we'll have a chat to you again in the future.
No worries. Thanks for having me.
Good on you. Shelley Nitsky there for Giant Bicycles. We're still riding with you. Sadly, our Perth Scorchers are out of the tournament, but to the final of the WBBL to be played on the weekend. We'll clear a commitment. On the other side, we are going to have a chat to Mark Hayes. There's a fair bit going on in golf. There's been a little bit of talk, too, around the great Greg Norman, the shark, the great white shark. We'll find out about that after this. Welcome back to Sports Day. Great to have Mark Hayes from Golf Australia on the program. Welcome, mate. How are you going?
Very well, thanks, Carl. Good day, Paul. Yeah, really well, and enjoying a bit of freedom over here on the East Coast finally, so it's happy days.
Well, are you getting out having a round? Because it seems that golf clubs have become very, very, very popular. Having a look at your latest newsletter, it seems that membership is booming. Tell us about it.
Yeah, coast to coast, which is fantastic. Obviously, the pandemic's been the catalyst for a lot of this, but membership has been up. More than 40,000 people this year there's been more than 40,000 new members this year alone. So it's a massive 126% increase nationally in the 10 months to the end of October. And that includes the lockdown periods that obviously hampered a couple of other states, most notably Victoria. So, yeah, it's been an amazing year for golf, and we were all sort of very, very fearful that, golf would be locked down and clubs might go to the wall. And as it's turned out, members are flocking, so it's fantastic.
Now, Hazy, we have had a lot of tournaments cancelled in this country, but the Australian Amateur Championship remains on the summer schedule with a bold new twist. Tell us about it.
Yeah, we were actually... you've been at me for a few weeks about what the tournaments are going to be, and look, this isn't the Australian Open. We understand that, but it is a great tournament, the Australian Amateur Championship, been played since the late 1890s. Consecutively, other than the wars, and it's been moved into the slot that the Women's Australian Open was going to be in. So it's gone from January to February, mid-February, and it's going to be played at Cooyonga in Adelaide, which is one of the great tournament courses in this country. So we're very lucky to be able to play it, and especially on such a great course. So that's one bit of good tournament news that we've been able to bring.
Now, we've had a couple of local tournaments in Tasmania, the Tasmanian Amateur Championship. Mackenzie Wilson won her home championship for the very first time, and Lewis Dobler prolonged his winning habit, taking out the Tasmania Amateur Championship at, I think it's Mowbray, wasn't it?
That's right, Mowbray, Ricky Ponting's old neighbourhood. And this is, Louis Dobler has been on the radar for several years, and when we talk about that Australian Amateur Championship, he's one of about half a dozen blokes who are ready-made professionals, and we need to keep him on our black book. I think that Hayden Hopewell, one of your boys over there in the West, if he can get to Cooyonga without too much quarantining and stuff required, he'll be another one. But those guys are going to have a massive shootout when we get to Adelaide. And Mackenzie Wilson, I'm not going to jump out to anyone at the moment, but she's been prominent, shall we say, on social media since she was a little girl, and she's now Will Hobart. And she's starting to cash that in as a young amateur. So she's a golf nut deluxe, Carl. She's absolutely crazy about golf. So it's good to see that sort of paying fruit for her as well.
What about around the world? Has there been any tournaments played in recent times?
Bugger all, hey?
I thought so. It was a bit quiet, wasn't it, on the golf front?
Yeah, look, there's a couple of really big women's tournaments coming up, but they had a couple of weeks off in the lead-up to it. So they were back last week, the LPGA. But they're coming up to their Tour Championship and also the US Women's Open on the LPGA side of things. But there's only one tournament on the men's in all of men's golf this week. And I think it's the Alfred Dunhill Championship in South Africa. So realistically, this week we've got one Australian male professional playing, which is almost unbelievable when you think, you know, the calendar's about to turn to December. We'd be flat out normally, but that's been the year it is.
Did you make a decision too early about the Australian summer, and is there a possibility that that decision can be reversed?
No and no, because you see the problem that the Australian Open tennis is starting to endure with the quarantine restrictions being placed on the athletes by specific governments, the Australian and the Victorian one in this case. And that's the same rules that apply to us. And the bottom line of that is, I think I've tried to explain before, is we're not going to be able to get even a Mark Leishman, but I was thinking more along the lines of, say, a Dustin Johnson, for example, to come down for 3 weeks, 2 weeks of quarantine and 1 week of playing, when they're playing for $600,000, when they can play for $6 or $8 million every week in the US. It's just not financially viable for them to do it for that long with the quarantine blocks that we have at the moment.
Now, Hazy, tell our audience about the longest day of golf and how people can get involved.
Well, this is one of the great challenges. It started in Victoria a few years ago, and it's gone around the country. It's your chance to play 72 holes in one day, four rounds of golf. But for the first time, you can play variations of it with 54 or 36 holes. And for those not inclined to walk the whole way, you can play in a cart if you need to. But the idea of it was to give yourself a real physical challenge and raise money for the skin cancer part of the Cancer Councils of Australia, the various state cancer councils. Cancer is obviously a horrendous thing for us all to endure, especially out in the summer sun. And I can tell you, my fifth year in a row that I've had a crack at it. So it's a brutally challenging day, but it's very rewarding at the same time. So I'd love to see you guys out there actually among it. That'd be great.
Yeah, it would be great. Now, have you seen the shark walking along the beach with his dog, with his rig out? And Paige Spirinac, I think, might have made some comments around this. And now there's a bit of social media fun going on between these two. Have you seen that?
Well, I haven't seen Paige Spirinac's comments, but I did see the great white shark with his rig, among other things, prominently on display. Not sure what rating your radio show is, but have you seen something like that in your life?
Oh, mate, he's unbelievably fit for a bloke of his age still, isn't he?
Yeah, look. If you're serious about it for just 2 milliseconds, everything that's above the belt is unbelievable. Yeah. For a 65-year-old, he's got that V shape. He's absolutely ripped. Everything below the belt, I don't think I should talk too much about, to be honest.
Well, he was excited walking the dog, mate. That's all we'll say, wasn't he? Thanks very much for your time.
Very, very refreshing walk, I reckon, Carl.
Thank you, mate. Nice to talk to you. Take care. Look after yourself, and we'll have a chat to you very soon. Cheers.
Perfect. Thanks.
Mark Hayes from Golf Australia. Hayes, have you seen the pic of the great
Greg
Norman?
No, I haven't. Can you describe it to me, Carl?
Well, he's got a white cap on. He's got no shirt on. He's got a pair of blue, what you would call shorts, walking shorts. He's got his mobile phone in the left pocket. There's a shot of him down the beach where he's walking along with some seaweed. The dog is on his right-hand side. The pitcher is walking towards us. And Hayes, you need to see the picture to see what we're talking about. But he looks very excited, Hayes. I'll leave it right there.
I'll check it out.
Yeah, you go check it out. I'm sure many will be checking that out as we speak right now for the golfing news. We'll be back with more of Sports Day after this. Welcome back to Sports Day, and Carl Langdon and Paul Hayes will be with you tonight if you've just joined us for the first time. And Hayes, last night we went out to headquarters for Greyhounds WA. We had a good night, didn't we? And we both came around with a little bit more in our wallet for once.
Well, thanks to you, and also David Short was very good with some tips, but it was a very good night out there, and enjoyed the steak that I had, and I saw your palmy. Geez, it was big.
Oh. Oh, I tell you what, that palmy, I reckon it was repeating on me for the next hour afterwards. But I tell you what, if you get out there on a Wednesday night, you get a palmy, a pint, and a $5 punt for $25. It's absolutely worthwhile. I do urge you to get out there, and hopefully you can get some tips from this man who hosts Go Greyhounds. His name is Callum Robson, and he joins us here on Sports Day. Cal, welcome. How are you, mate?
Yeah, very well. Just hoping to get a few winners over the weekend for my debut on this show.
Righto, mate. Well, under no pressure. David Short was very good to us last night. 3 out of 4, including race 5, number 5, that paid $7, which was a good each-way tip for us. Sometimes, you know, they're pretty short when we get to the Greyhounds, but I know you've got a couple for us where you want to start on Friday night down there at Mandurah.
Yeah, so Friday night at Mandurah, I'm going to be looking for a bit of valley, probably the opposite of what James usually does, but first one comes in race 4, number 4, and it's West on Mia, trained by Chris House. The 2 will be a short price favourite, Mild Marcus. I thought the dog was only fair last week. West on Mia is a dog that can show the early speed. I think it's a good chance of leading this race. has gone around 27.76 in the past, and from there will be very hard to catch. And I think you should be getting around the $9 range. So I'm an I support each way bet on West on Mia. We'll go on to race six. Try Catch Me will be the short price favourite in box one, probably early leader. I like the runner Farthing Minnelli last start, went 22.68. We'll look to cross. There's half a chance of crossing Try Catch Me just because Farthing Minnelli's box manners tend generally pings out of the boxes. If it runs a 22.68, it'll be winning, and that's around $9. Moving on to Saturday night, I've got one that should be relatively short, probably looking around the $3 range, and that's Sir Monty in race four. It's dog number four, has Starbuck to the outside that likes to use a lot of the track, which will open up the track. I think it can cross Sunset Toxic and Zach Nelly to the inside. From there, Sir Monty will be leading, held off Starbuck last week, and I think can do the same again.
What about some of the big races out there on Saturday night? Do we have the big superstar Mermaid Minnelli going around?
No, not this week. Probably the biggest name going around at the moment is Sunset Spitfire, going for 11 straight. It's currently 10 out of 10, going for 11 and looks to be able to do the job again in race six. And then the other heat, race five, you've got probably lesser dogs, but Fernando Starvey, it's a right in that race. So that should be good racing down at Cannington on Saturday night.
I tell you what, I think the big race is on Friday night, isn't it, at Sandown Park. The Melbourne Cup Final, the richest race in the world. And I tell you what, mate, I don't reckon I've seen Tommy Shelby, the WA star, at $9 in my life on Tab Touch. Unbelievable odds, really.
Yeah, it's got to be generous. And he has to be a chance. If he pings out like he did at Wentworth Park in the Derby, he has to be in with a shout. Heartstyle Rico should give him a good card across, I think. And if he's within a couple of lengths, I think Simon Todd Helen probably leads, but if he camps riding behind Simon Todd Helen, it's got to be a big show. So I couldn't turn anyone off at around the $9 range.
And mate, when it comes to the Greyhounds and Go Greyhounds, just tell us a little bit about your show.
Yeah, so on Go Greyhounds, we actually go through most of the races on a Friday and Saturday night. We pick out around 2 to 3 races each night, go through those. We then usually get a trainer on to talk about upcoming races and their background story. Segment three is more of a, we look at certain topics in greyhound racing that maybe could improve, there could be improvement as such. And we also talk about specials on track like the Palmy Python Punt, which is great for $25. And then in segment four, we get David Short on. He gives his explanations and tips across the weekend. And obviously, if he's providing the tips like he did last night, then he's probably the most popular person on the show.
Yeah, well, he's popular on our show too, mate, because we will be having a yak to him. Thank you very much for filling in for James Broadhurst tonight, mate, for Greyhounds WA. Nice to have you on the program. Take care, and we'll have a chat to you again in the future, I'm sure. Thanks, Cal.
Thanks for having me.
Callum Robson there from Go Greyhounds. Chase for charity, Hayes. Thanks to Greyhounds WA. Which way are you looking this week?
I'm heading towards his tips. I like him. He gives some good explanations there. Race number four on Friday, number four, West on Mia, and race six, number three, Farthing Minnelli. Those two will get me a good return, Carl, to go further in front of you.
All right. Well, if you don't get a return, everyone can wait until Saturday night and jump on my dog, Red Cap Minnelli. David Hobby is the trainer. It's a last start winner and $25 each way for me and our chase for charity. It is race nine, number three, everyone. Thanks to Greyhounds WA fighting against motor neurone disease. Now, let's get to David Short with the latest Tab Touch odds update. G'day, Shorty.
G'day, boys. Nice to be catching up with you. How are you tonight?
Oh, we're going brilliant, mate. And it was great to see that your fingers were still working last night as I sent some celebratory thumbs up and you sent me back beers and bourbons and everything else with those little glasses that you sent me back, those little emojis that you love to use, Shorty, after Poetic Justice at race five, number five at $7. And then you also sent Hayes and I a dirty double for the win, Malawi Minnelli in race eight. Race eight, number seven, into race 10, number one. Got the Sugar, looked a little bit doubtful there for a moment, but got the chocolates at $1.70, and yoo-hoo, we were singing last night, thanks to David Short.
Good news, good news. Nice when the plan comes together, boys, and never in doubt there, that last one. I must admit, I was sweating up like John Candy at a Las Vegas buffet there late in the piece, but was able to get itself up off the canvas and duly saluted, so it was the right result for the punters.
Three out of four ain't bad, Shorty. Very, very good effort. And we raised some money, some important money in our chase for charity, which we've already given our tips, mate. We probably should have waited before we had a chat about that. But, of course, we're talking about all of the odds in sport. Where do you want to start tonight?
We'll go to the first of the one-dayers, boys, tomorrow between Australia and India. Tremendous to have international cricket back on the menu. Little bit unsure as to exactly what we might see. Plenty of the Indians have been involved in the Premier League, quite a few of the Aussies as well. There's been some Shield cricket, so they'll be blowing out the cobwebs. The Aussies going at $1.59, India at $2.30. Most runs for the match, Dave Warner for Australia to be the leading run scorer at 370. Four for Finch and Smith, while for India, Virat Kohli heads up betting at 290 in front of Gil, Agarwal and Dhawan, all at $4.50.
The big racing continues. Shorty out there at Ascot, it's the Crown Winterbottom Stakes. Should be a beauty, tracking the short price favourite.
Yeah, it looks pretty hard to beat as well, doesn't it, Hayes? In the feature comes across with that proven Group 1 form. Worth noting that there is a lovely first four carryover on the race if you're looking to get involved, and the $2.30 is a little bit trim to take straight out. From a betting perspective, opened up at $2.15. It's been a touch easy. On the second line, Indian Pacific $7.50 and firm. Celebrity Queens $9 into $8.50. Stage Man $10 out to $11. Valor Road 14 and firm. Red Can Man has been backed at the bigger odds, 23 into 16, and Elite Street 15 out to 16. But really looking forward to the Group 1 at this stage. The East Coast are trekking, though, the warm favourite.
What about some of the other support acts out there?
Looking forward to the regional championship final, courtesy of Tab Touch. It's an open affair. What about Moses at 460? Manhattan Money, along with Absolute, both at $6.50 for Megadon, $8.50 for Pure Magnus. It's $11 and upwards for the rest there. And the listed People Start Tats Cup, Royal Command, our $2.65 favourite. When betting did open up here, it was a $2.50 chance. It's been as big as $2.90. Come back in. Money good for Utgard Loki on the second line, $8.50 into $6.50. Arctic Stream, $7.50 out to $8. And Double Digits being well backed at the odds, $16 into $9.
All right, and Manhattan Money is one that I've been tipped as one of the best bets on the program on the weekend, so hopefully can get the chocolates. Race 7, number 1, everyone, if you're looking to have a punt. Now, Shorty, huge race when it comes to the Greyhounds, the Melbourne Cup. We just spoke about it with Callum Robson, who hosts Greyhounds. I don't think I've seen Tommy Shelby at $9 for a long, long, long time.
No, spot on, and it just shows you how deep this field is. The big five have got through from a betting perspective on the pre-post. Simon Told, Helen Shimmershine, Tigalong Tonk, Hardstyle Rico and Tommy Shelby. So it is dripping with quality. Simon Told, Helen is the dog that's got the favours as far as being drawn closest to the rails. 245 favourite. Shimmershine and Tigalong Tonk both at 440. Hardstyle Rico 5, and as you've alluded to, great each way price for Tommy Shelby. He was mighty in his heat last week, just barging through, trying to find a passage, but the draw certainly not done him too many favours. But nonetheless, we'll be cheering hard for Tommy Shelby, flying the flag for WA in the Group 1 Melbourne Cup final. And worth mentioning, there is a massive quaddy carryover of $250,000. That pool's expected to be up around $1 million. So for Greyhound fans, make sure you get your thoughts together for that big quaddy there tomorrow night. Very rare that you get a chance to play into a $1 million quaddy pool on the dogs.
Mate, thank you very much in helping us out for our Chase for Charity last night. It was great that we were able to raise a few $100 for the Chase for Charity for motor neurone disease, mate. And we look forward to having a chat to you again next week. Take care.
Absolute pleasure, boys. All the best.
David Short there from Tab Touch. Just make sure that if you want to have a punt, you can go to tabtouch.com.au. You can download the app onto your mobile device, or you can get into your local TAB. We'll clear a commitment on the other side. We'll come back for some fishing and camping news with Mark Lacroix here on... Welcome back to Sports Day. Mark Lacroix joins us for fishing and camping for Parkside Tow Bars. Matty Conder and his team have got a huge spring sale catalogue out now in store and online, parksidetowbars.com.au. Welcome, Lekka. How are you going?
Yeah, I'm going good, guys. How are you?
Yeah, I'm going really well. Now, as you know, I've been up in Broome, the emergency mission, mate, after the trip to Shark Bay got cancelled 2 o'clock on Friday afternoon. I was then thinking, what am I going to do? I'm not staying home. I'm not going to sit around here. So I did the old emergency look at Qantas, and they had $48, 12,000-point fare. So jumped on the kite, went up to Broome. I hear that you posted a couple of the fish that we caught, some nice giant threadfin salmon on the telly, is that right?
Yeah, mate, well, they were nice fish. And I said to Hayes last, I actually started to feel a little bit bad because we wished the bad weather on you for Shark Bay, and it, I think it came true. So I was feeling quite bad for a little bit, and then I heard you're up in Broome, and all of those emotions went away pretty quickly because that's probably one of my favourite spots to go up and fish. And, yeah, targeting those redfin salmon in Roebuck Bay is sort of been a bit of a game changer since they cancelled the netting. And as soon as you sent the photos through, mate, I was pretty flat, but it seemed like it was a good trip, eh?
Yeah, it was. My good friends Campbell Gow and Clark Stashew came with me. Campbell caught himself a couple of nice threadfin salmon, and Clark caught himself a nice queenie. So I've sent you the pictures as evidence of that. And look, sadly, we had a gentleman that was eaten by a shark on Cable Beach. I mean, that was the morning after I left on the Saturday night. But one thing that I can say from a fishing perspective there, Lekka, and from a camping perspective, we stayed in the RAC caravan park, and there's some cabins there, and those cabins are wonderful. They're fully self-contained, and to Beck and her team, Beck works in the front office, to Beck and her team, her husband does a lot of the cleaning up at the park. I met also the guy that was actually going to clean our unit when we vacated it. He's a resident at the park, and to see some of the people that were there, Lekka, they've been stuck in some cases, some of the Victorians and New South Welshmen that we met there, mate, for 7 months. They've been stuck in Broome at that particular park. So, it's probably one of the places where you'd like to get stuck if you're going to get stuck anywhere, eh?
Oh, tell me about it. I think I wouldn't mind being stuck in Broome the last 7 months, especially when it comes to the fishing perspective. I mean, obviously you got the blue water stuff where you get the sailfish and all that sort of stuff offshore, and then we spoke about threadfin salmon and mud crabs and that sort of stuff in the creeks there in Roebuck Bay. And then if you head a little bit further north, Derby is probably one of the best spots on the planet to catch big barramundi as well. And they've been starting to do that up there, recently. So I can think of worse places to be, mate. I think if you were there for 7 months, it'd be hard to come back. I think I'd just look at properties and end up moving there.
Yeah, and it was really interesting too, mate, because as you do know, I think it was a couple of days into my trip, the actual borders opened. So people started to cross at Kununurra, and there was a couple of families that came in that had been travelling from Queensland. They finally were allowed through the border up there at Kununurra. So they were very thankful to the West Australian government. I know that because apparently up where they were, it was 47 degrees, Lekka. 47 degrees is bloody hot. Now, let's go to Exmouth. Speaking of Exmouth, I've got a couple of friends up there at the moment, and the fishing has been really hot, and the action when it comes to some of those pelagic species has been magnificent. You've sent us some wonderful pictures. Just tell our audience what has happened this week.
Yeah, well, I mean, it's blue marlin season up there, so they've been getting onto some nice fish. Blue marlin are absolutely massive, or they can grow massive, and it's really the peak in, you know, any angler's fishing career is to try and to chase a blue marlin. I'm still yet to do it. I have to sneak up there 1 year, but they've also been getting some dolphin fish as well, and the colours are just amazing on some of the fish they've been getting. You know, dolphin fish, well, a lot of the time they'll come up yellow and blue, but real silvery, sort of speckly blue pictures in some of the colours in some of the pictures I've been sent this week. And Exmouth, you know, along with blue marlin being one of the top fish you'd want to chase, Exmouth is one of the best places on the planet to fish. So we're pretty lucky to have the borders, within reach of Exmouth in WA. If you're going to go on a holiday, a tow caravan or take a boat anywhere, that's probably the leading spot. But the trouble is trying to get accommodation, I think, at the moment.
It is tough at the moment. Now, tell us a bit more about Scott Reef, because I'm looking at some of the photos here, and there's a bluefish that I haven't seen before. Is that a humphead wrasse?
Yeah, I haven't seen too much of them before either. That's the first one I've sort of been sent a picture of being caught. I thought they were sort of maybe more towards the east coast, those fish. But the guys have done a trip out to Scott Reef, which is about, I think it's over 300 k's northwest of Cape Levique. So... an extended sort of trip with real teaser fishing adventures, I think they went out with. And I'll tell you what, some of the fish they caught with that humphead wrasse was an absolute monster and a great-looking fish, but also got blue marlin again and a massive dog-tooth tuna. It would have to be, you know, at least 5 or 6 foot long, absolute beast of a fish. You know, it's probably one of the bigger ones I've seen caught in WA, so... I think they've put a clip up on YouTube, so if anyone likes a good video, if you go on there and search Real Teaser, you'll probably catch up with that video. It looks like an absolutely magic spot to go and visit.
A few flowery cod as well, by the look of it.
Yeah, and coral trout, all those sort of fish, mate. It just looked like the trip of a lifetime, you know, especially if you've got a group of mates that you like going with. I think they were surfing over there and everything. So I haven't done too much research on the place, but it looks absolutely amazing. We did the Timor Boxes, it was called, years ago, which is one of those trips, and had nothing on what Scott Reef looks like. They caught some amazing fish.
Absolutely. Now, Lekka, I went out and pulled my cray pots this morning. I got two. I've been sent some videos from the pros that are working up towards your way. Not quite. Lancelin and Ledge Point, so not quite as far as Cervantes, but they've sent me a potload full of whites. So the whites have certainly started to move. There's still a little bit more on the inside. We're out in 18 metres, so I just thought I'd compare notes. So yours out, and how have you been going?
Yeah, mate. Now I'm about to put my pots out tomorrow, so I'm going to sneak up north. I'm going to go up my old hometown and chuck them out. But I thought that you fishing in 18 metres, everyone's getting the whites at the moment that's fishing a little bit closer, so sort of in that 10 metre range, I think. So you'll catch up. You know, they'll be out there before long. I think this is the week where they're really going to march. But the guys inside generally will get them for, you know, get the early ones, and then your pots will be full before you know it, I reckon.
All right, 9 o'clock tomorrow is my date for destiny tomorrow, so we'll see how we go. Mate, some beautiful deep sea fish are being caught down in Albany. I got a picture from a friend. I actually should have sent them to you. There was three lovely jewfish that they got off Walpole, but what are the deep water species that you sent me the pictures of this week? A couple of young kids are holding up some beautiful fish.
Yeah, so the guys down south, they don't have the bands or anything like that we're sort of under at the moment. So the guys have been deep dropping off Albany in about 300 metres of water. And, you know, they do really well down there for Harpooka, which is what these guys have got. They bagged out down there. So, you know, a lot of guys are travelling from Perth now to go and fish that Albany region just for the weekend. And catch a feed of fish because they're not under the closures. So a couple of young guys headed down there. They also, this week, I know it's not a species that is renowned for WA, but a couple of guys have gone out and fished some of the local fresh waters here, and it must have some Murray cod in there. They have got an absolute horse of a Murray cod, probably up around, would have to be over a metre long, and an absolute monster. So they're probably declared a pest over here. I don't think they're meant to be in our waterways, but there's some guys that have stocked some of the fresh water around here, and these young guys have gone out and caught it on an artificial frog. So absolute fish of a lifetime there as well.
Read it now, mate. The West Coast Zone Abalone Days have been announced. So licensed fishers between 7 and 8 a.m. on these dates, everyone. Now, Lekka, I know that you actually like to go down and participate in this. Saturday the 12th of December is when you can have your first crack, mate, not too far away. 9th of January, 23rd of January, 6th of February, 20th of February. The other thing is that we do have the ability these days with technology to move the days. You'll be sent an SMS if that happens, but a little bit more flexible. Mate, but those dates have been secured.
Yeah, mate, I walk down from my joint. There's abalone just not far from where I live, which is good because I take the kids down there, and it's an awesome morning. You know, I've got to try and find a location that's not chockers with people, and I've been down there, mate, kicked in the head by flippers, I've been stabbed by screwdrivers, the whole lot, so I try and get out the back now and get a bit of space to myself, but there's abalone everywhere. It doesn't take long to get your bag limit if the weather's good. That's the only thing, is if the visibility's bad, it can take a little while longer, but I've had no trouble. The fact that they've moved the days and been flexible with the days when the weather's bad has been a game changer. It's been awesome. You know, it just takes away the stress of having to look up and look around and see if everyone's all right. So I'm loving the fact that they're doing that these days, and I'll definitely be down there. What'd you say, 12th of December?
That's it, mate. 12th of December between 7 and 8 a.m. And today, mate, this morning, 10,000 yellowtail kingfish were released off our metro coast. It's part of the Metropolitan Fish Stocking Program through Recfish West and, of course, funded by the money that we pay to go fishing here in Western Australia. They were released from South Mole there at Frio, and probably another 10,000 more reasons to get excited about hooking one of those powerful pelagics off Perth. You can catch plenty of them off those rocks at the back of Rotto. Have you gone out and had a crack for them, Lekka?
I haven't this year. We got quite a few of them last year. I mean, they, for their size, pound for pound, they're probably one of the hardest pulling fish that you can catch. So I haven't caught any big ones. I might have all sort of been rats, but yeah, like you said, on that west end of Rotto, there's some good spots to go and target them. A bit of burley, they get excited, similar to Samson fish and stuff like that, but a little bit better eating. So good news. Good to see some of the funds are going to going in good places, because we do pay quite a bit for our fees, for, you know, ability to go and chase crays and boat fish and all that sort of stuff now. So I don't mind paying it when they're putting it towards more yellowtail kingfish in the ocean, because it gives us a chance to get out there and catch them.
Good on you, mate. Thanks for having a chat. Nice and comprehensive as usual, and we will have a chat to you next week. Take care.
No worries. Cheers, guys.
Good on you, Mark Lacroix there for Parkside Tow Bars. And the Perth Fads are out there, everyone, too. The Perth Game Fishing Club have put them out there, and we can expect plenty of dolphin fish, which Lekka just spoke about. They're all based between Rotto and Two Rocks, the Fads, and the anticipated Geraldton Fads are fast approaching deployment as well, and we've got some new Rockingham Fads that should be in the water shortly. I will keep you up to date with all of that as it unfolds here. For fishing and camping, thanks to the wonderful team at Parkside Tow Bars, Perth's biggest range of tow bars and more. Spring sale is on right now. ParksideTowBars.com.au. You can find out all of the details there. We'll come back and we'll finish off with Barra and O'Day's Green to Green. And we finish off with Barra and O'Day's Green to Green because the little things are everything. On this day in 2017, Aussie Steph Gilmore claimed her record-equaling seventh world title. In 1932, Donald Bradman completed 10,000 first-class runs. It took him 126 innings. And on this day, Eddie Betts and Kane Lambert celebrate their birthdays. Eddie Betts, a new rookie in the AFL, can you believe it, for Barra and O'Day. Don't miss out on the little moments, because the little things are everything. That's all we've got time for tonight. We'll be back from tomorrow night at 6 o'clock. We'll see you then.